Hey everybody, it's me, the Vern. Just wanted to let you folks know before we begin this latest episode of Cinema Recap that the show does kind of end abruptly. About 10 minutes were cut from this episode, but I didn't want to leave out the whole thing. And besides, all you really missed was a discussion about Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet, and then the upcoming movies of NetSuite that they'll cover. Don't worry, next episode, both John and Mark will be on there for the full thing, and everyone will be happy. It'll be a good show, but this one's still a good show too, so enjoy it, alright? Goodbye.
This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
All right, and welcome back to Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, it's been a while, man. How you been?
It's been a long time. You know, we just came off of Thanksgiving, very much needed detox and debriefing from work and whatnot. But yeah, you and I, it's been a little bit of a while since we did one of these. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, me too, man. I had to miss a couple weekends ago, and then last weekend I was, you know, traveling back for the holiday. Or I guess it was just this, I don't know, maybe it was only 1 week we missed, but it feels like it's been a while.
Yeah.
And we're well overdue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, did you have a good holiday?
It was good, Got to see mom and dad. We had Thanksgiving over at my sister's place. Got to, you know, play around with her new kitten. So it was awesome. You know, those times like that, nice. You remember a lot. So no complaints whatsoever.
Awesome, good deal. And I think you have gotten a chance to see a few movies here lately that you'll be able to catch everybody up with as well.
Yeah. We might have to go into a little bit of like a very brief top 10 because some stuff started in the top 5 then left the top 5 at the end of the week. So we can kind of touch into a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Should we do that when we get to the weekend box office?
Absolutely.
The top 10 and just touch on a few other ones that you caught?
Absolutely. Yep.
Perfect. Alrighty, well, before we get into that, let's go ahead and kick things off here with some real news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
You know, not a lot that I saw. I wasn't able to check as consistently as I like to lately, just with a lot of running around the past couple weeks here, but I think without a doubt the biggest news is the Lion King trailer that dropped.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everything else was put on the back burner. This came out just a couple days ago. We were looking at what the actual views were. If this number is currently accurate, it looks like they're about at 42 million over 4 days. So, I mean, I'm sure at the end of it's going to be one of the most, you know, widely viewed trailers of all time on YouTube. But, you know, everyone has very pretty positive recollections of The Lion King growing up. You know, it's one of those movies I think that, for whatever reason, one way or another, always made an impression on you know, anyone, wherever they grew up or whatever they did. And even if it wasn't the movie itself, I mean, it really caught a lot of second wind during its Broadway tour. I mean, a lot of people I know maybe didn't care so much for The Lion King on home media, but when they actually went to go see it, you know, on Broadway, it's like it stuck out to them even more. So, you know, Lion King, huge IP. I was actually thinking about, you know, how big it would get next year. I mean, it's going to be a huge, you know, a huge number regardless. But could it maybe, you know, do Avengers numbers where it ends up like the number one, you know, worldwide movie of 2019? I don't know. I think everything's on the table.
So I think I read an article that said it had 224 million views in 24 hours. It broke the record for the most trailer views in a day, I think. So I think that number just speaks volumes to how big this movie is going to be. I mean, I think it's going to be the biggest movie of the year. And it just appeals to such a broad audience. You know, our parents' generation is going to want to see it because they remember bringing, you know, their children, us, to the theater to see it. We want to see it because it was, you know, one of the biggest animated movies that we had growing up. And I think every kid probably likes it to some extent, or at least has some sort of fond memory around it. And then the animated movies nowadays, the live action ones, they appeal to the younger generation so much. So it's literally everyone's going to want to see this movie. And I think the some of the castings, you know, bringing in Beyonce, that draws a certain level of interest to, you know, maybe other people that wouldn't normally want to see the movie, but now they do. It's just, it's very unique. So I really think, you know, it's going to be between this and Avengers next year for the biggest release of 2019.
Yeah, 1-2 in some way, shape, or form. You make a really good point about the cast. I feel like it's got something for everyone. I mean, Beyonce is a name that sticks out, but, you know, Donald Glover, you know, he's got the culture of America in a lot of ways in his hands. So, you know, he's got Seth Rogen, Chiwetel Ejiofor. Everyone's in this movie, so I think it's going to be something for everyone. And as you said, everyone has some usual positive recollections and memories of The Lion King. So the stuff that I've heard, at least the early reactions, are people are pretty amped about it. You know, I saw it and I do think it was a pretty good trailer. Looks like it is going to be a shot for shot, you know, remake, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just kind of means like they know the story they've got and they think they just want to keep it as true and as much as we remember it as we possibly can. So, you know, how do you feel about it being a shot for shot remake?
I didn't realize they were doing that.
Okay. You didn't catch the whole, you know, when he's on the, I'm forgetting the actual, you know, peak of the mountain, but, you know, the whole kingdom is around and Mufasa or, it's not Mufasa, I'm forgetting his name.
Oh, I'm sorry, you mean for the trailer?
Yeah, the trailer.
Oh, okay, man, my bad, I thought you meant the entire movie was like a shot-for-shot remake. Well, no, I'm glad you mentioned X. That was actually one thing I wanted to throw out there was, I thought it was kind of humorous that this trailer opened so big and it took, you know, virtually no creative thought. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, it looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, the effects are amazing, but to your point, it's a shot-for-shot remake, so it's not like there's any, you know, original story or anything put behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that popular and drew that much interest. So I just thought that was kind of humorous.
Yeah. The one thing I have that I do notice, though, and I love The Jungle Book. I think it's, you know, probably the pinnacle of what Disney has done at this point as far as their live action remakes. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, how I feel they're kind of half and half. Like, they have really good ones sometimes, but they have bad ones like The Nutcracker or Wrinkle in Time. I will say that in about 3 years, you can honestly see the improvement in, like, technical quality, like, from The Jungle Book, which I still think is amazing, but, man, just seeing at least some of the stuff we have seen in the trailer, you know, granted, but some of the stuff that we see in there is just, it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's ridiculous how good the effects are getting, so I don't know. This one looks like it's going to be a surefire hit across the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, I'm honestly getting bored talking about it just because we know what it's going to be. You know, there's going to be no surprises, and I think you hit it on the head, too. I know the Avengers is going to be a whole event in itself, but I think the Lion King, in a lot of ways, you know, might be the bigger one, only because it's hitting on so many more different avenues and markets than even the Avengers can. So I think that's going to be like a huge, interesting little thing to watch as we come to 2019 and that blockbuster summer.
Yeah, man, Disney's taking over the world next year between Star Wars, Avengers, and all the live action, you know, like classic animated remakes. It's going to be unbelievable. And I guess just switching gears here, one other thing you'd mentioned. I know you love the Jungle Book remake, and we've got the Mowgli one coming up that Andy Serkis directed. I think it's released on the 29th Netflix and maybe in theaters too. So I'm really curious to see how that one is.
Yeah, good point. It's one I keep on forgetting about, but it's coming. It's like apparently this week. So
I know it feels like Jon Favreau's Jungle Book. Yeah, it had so much, you know, stronger marketing behind it that, you know, this one, I keep forgetting about it until I check the upcoming releases and see that it's, you know, in the near future.
Right.
So, curious to see how that one's going to come out.
Me too.
Alrighty, and with that, we will we'll go ahead and pause here to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
MovieMavericks.com, broadcasting current box office breakdowns, movie news, and reviews. Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
Hey now, even though we're over 200 episodes deep into the Movie Mavericks podcast, it's still not too late to start listening.
Where every show we give you 10 truths, 20 lies, and a bunch of Hollywood secrets.
It's like existentialism slipping into nihilism.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hello everyone, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top three lists.
Okay, yeah, thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
That's correct, Brendan. On top of our main show, every Friday,
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
Good job, Brendan.
Thank you, JD. It's my goal to make you proud. You're the father, after all.
Yes, and I'm very proud. You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com.
Brendan, will you please let me complete just one?
Nope.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hey,
no,
go cry at Midnight Special again, okay? That's what you're good for.
I will. You know what? And I'll do it while pummeling you. I'll do both at the same time.
How are you going to pummel me? Yeah, I don't buy
that. That's just how it works.
All right, and we are back, and we'll go ahead and dive into a cinema recap of the weekend box office.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
And we'll do the top 10 this week, just since we're a couple weeks removed. And so the numbers that I'm looking at are, I think they're a little off because I've seen kind of conflicting, you know, recaps of the numbers of
sure.
The full Thanksgiving weekend. I think I'm only looking at the Friday through Sunday, or like Thursday night through Sunday numbers.
Okay.
But that's what we're going to go off here.
Sure.
So coming in at number 10, we've got A Star Is Born down three spots from number 7 with another 3 million. And 191 million total gross. So not much. We've talked about this one a ton, and we'll certainly be talking about it in the next, I don't know, probably month and a half when we're diving deeper into the more of the Oscars recap.
Absolutely.
And coming in at number 9, we've got Green Book that stars Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali with 5.5 million. I think this is its first full release weekend. And coming in at number 8, we've got Widows with 8.2 million. And this is one that we've both seen and we have not had a chance to talk about yet. We were both really excited about it. And, you know, we're guessing with Steve McQueen directing and the monster cast, there's probably going to be some Oscar love somewhere for this one. What were your thoughts on Widows, Mark?
For me, it's honestly a top 10 movie at this point. I'd say it's probably right outside of my top 5. But I really do enjoy it. But I do, you know, in my post that I wrote, I did put in like a caveat. It is one of those movies where, you know, if you're expecting a huge on dive into, you know, the heist and kind of the action, the spectacle, you're not going to get that. And I do think a lot of people went into that with that understanding, and it disappointed them a little bit. I don't know if that was full on the reason for it kind of underperforming a little bit at the box office, but I do think a lot of people had this idea in their heads that, you know, they were going to see like a really involved, you know, kind of heist. And it's kind of surprising when the heist itself maybe lasts, you know, 10 minutes max. That's about it. It's not that type of movie. But with that said, you know, I thought the movie was pretty stellar. As far as just pure on execution and what McQueen does, I don't think there's a lot better than him right now in regards to setting up his shots and, you know, really getting into his characters and, you know, going into super deep layers. It's one of those movies where the first time I might watch it, I liked it a lot, but there are things that I probably don't get off first viewing. But I'm interested to go back because, you know, Steve McQueen really does lay a lot of he lays out a lot of clues. And I say, like, he's not one of these guys like a Chekhov's gun where he will just lay out something. He'll never bring it back up. If he brings out something and he, you know, kind of lingers on it a little bit, it came back up in the movie. And I thought that was, you know, pretty phenomenal. Just the level and attention to detail that he brought into the whole production.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it's a very well done movie. I'm a big Steve McQueen fan. I thought that, you know, he put out a really solid flick here. I enjoyed it. I was hooked, you know, from the moment the movie started. I think I had a few gripes. I mean, man, are the guys at the beginning out of the movie quick, which is fine because I understand that's not the focus of the movie at all. But when you have guys, and should we avoid spoilers here, Mark?
I still think so. I do. Let's, try to be respectful.
Because sure. But you know, like, I love John Bernthal.
Sure.
And he maybe had like 5 lines in the movie. So I would have just liked a little more development on the backstory for, you know, his character and Liam Neeson, and just to see a little bit more of the heist that they carry out at the beginning of the movie. We don't get to see too much of that.
Yeah.
I also, there's a pretty significant twist halfway through, and it felt unnecessary to me. I thought the movie had a really good pace and was trucking along quite well. And I think if you take that twist out, A, it doesn't really deviate the plot too much, and B, it probably saves you about 10 minutes of the movie. So I could have done without it. What were your thoughts on the twist? Did you like it? Do you not want it in there?
I like it. You know, I really do. I don't know if it was as effortlessly pulled off as, say, like the twist in Gone Girl. You know, granted, they're two different movies, but actually both still written by Gillian Flynn, so not necessarily. Yep. I don't know if they had that, you know, level of execution where everything just built up perfectly and then it just, you know, decrescendos, but then it's like very therapeutic and, you know, the whole wool is pulled off of your eyes, whatever that saying is. But I liked it. You know, maybe if there's like one or two things I would have done a little differently with how the actual scene is set up, maybe I could offer a suggestion or, you know, think about a way I would have done it. But no, I really don't have any real issue with the twist. One of the things that I've kind of heard was, you know, one of the characters' motivations, it felt a little bit flimsy to a lot of people, and I can kind of see where they're coming from. But, you know, and I know we're getting very, very vague here, you know, intentionally, but I didn't have any massive problems. It maybe could have been pulled off a little bit better, but nothing massive.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is maybe it almost felt a little bit sloppy or you know, just kind of thrown in there. So maybe if McQueen would have done that a little bit differently, I would have liked it more.
Sure.
But I don't know. Just wasn't a huge fan. I thought the acting was phenomenal across the board. The female leads of Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, and Elizabeth Debicki, I thought they all did a phenomenal job. And kind of their... their relationship that they have with one another and how it develops was, you know, interesting and humorous. And just seeing this background of how, you know, these women that have, you know, no criminal history, how they start, you know, planning this heist. It was really interesting to me. And that's what I really, you know, one of the things I was hoping to get out of the movie was that kind of insight. And I thought McQueen touched on that rather well.
Yeah.
And I guess the last thing that I'll say is, I mean, every scene that Daniel Kaluuya was in, he was a scene stealer. I thought he was awesome.
Oh yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more on that front. You know, from the get go, and I really don't think there was a weak performance in this entire cast. You know, I know sometimes with some of the people, you know, I'll throw out the names there, Rodriguez and Liam Neeson, they've kind of been accused of occasionally of like phoning it in, or maybe just not having the talent anymore to carry off these type of roles. But I mean, I didn't think either of them was out of their element at all. But yeah, Daniel Kaluuya was amazing from the get go. I've been hearing Oscar's buzz. I don't know if his actual role like has the meat and the depth to really, you know, do much on that front. But, you know, nonetheless, I think he just shows his his versatility moving forward. I mean, when I saw him on the screen, I mean, I don't know much of him outside of Get Out, Sicario, both great roles, but, you know, I didn't see any of those roles in this role that he played here. I didn't see Chris Washington or his Reggie Wayne in Sicario. I just saw him for this, you know, malicious villain who will do, you know, anything to kind of protect his brother and, you know, carry out the goals of what they need to do.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. You mentioned Oscar buzz surrounding his name. I would not be surprised at all if he gets that. You know, similar to a Jeremy Renner, you know, kind of the unhinged sidekick in the town.
Yeah.
I mean, include and he'd have to speak, you know, just some of the actions that he had or his, like when he locked eyes with people, it was so creepy. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's a testament to him, testament to McQueen. This is not a spoiler, but, you know, there's a scene in the gymnasium where, you know, he's looking for answers and, you know, there's just an entire, you know, 2 minute pan of him going around and these guys are, you know, saying something. And then, you know, it just ends abruptly, but that's a scene I will not forget. And that's it's a performance I won't forget. So, I mean, I definitely wouldn't be shocked or surprised if he got a nomination. My only concern is I don't know if the actual character meat and depth is there to do much, but is he deserving? I would say so at this point for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that scene was unbelievable. The way that McQueen did the pan was phenomenal. Yeah. So yeah, if he does get the Oscar nomination, my bet would be that's going to be the scene that they use in his clip.
Yeah.
But, we're obviously going to dive into that one since it's one that we had both seen, but, we'll keep moving on here. Number 7, rather disappointing opening weekend for Robin Hood with 9.2, on a $100 million budget, no less. So, I mean, that's its opening weekend at number 7 and no real surprises. I don't think we really had a ton of interest in this one. Did anything else on that one, Mark?
No, I think you hit a lot of it on the head. You know, I think the comparison of this one is King Arthur Legend of the Sword, which you and I, you know, both kind of like. We think it's a little bit unfairly, you know, panned as it was last year. But no, you know, this one, I had intentions of seeing it and I still might get around to seeing it. But, you know, we're both busy guys. And there's always other competing things that we want to see or kind of feel the need to see. So this one, the more I kind of started reading more and more about it, even from an action perspective, it seemed a little bit, disappointing and deflating. And I like Taron Egerton. I like Jamie Foxx. I don't know if he's a guy maybe I would have ran with in this movie to kind of be Edgerton's sidekick, but no, ultimately it's a long way of me just saying I'm not surprised at this making the money it did. And yeah, I'd say probably after this weekend, it'll be out of theaters pretty significantly.
Yeah, it's going to be a quick one. Hopefully, I like Edgerton too. But I think he needs to do a strong movie to get his career back on track. Cause I can't remember the last movie of his that came out that I was, you know, feeling really positive about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, he obviously made his name with the Kingsman. The first one was good. I didn't mind the second Kingsman. But you know, I do think in a way this maybe is a little bit too similar to what he did with that, you know, with his character Robin Hood. So I do think it's good for him that he's going to be taking on the role of Elton John in Rockin' Man. I don't know a whole bunch about that movie yet, but it does kind of get him away from some of the, I don't know, bad boy type of lead characters that he's taken. He did Billionaire's Boys Club, which I don't think did a whole bunch of box office, but yeah.
No, that one was doomed.
Yeah, so box office $1.9 million on a $15 million budget. But anyway, yeah, here's the hoping that, you know, Rockin' Man, his Elton John, starring role, kind of really does, you know, put him on the fast track to something good. I know he's going to wrap up the Kingsman 3 movie and that whole trilogy, but yeah, I think the guy has too much talent to kind of just be limited to kind of what he's been doing. So I'm interested to see kind of what his next phase of his career looks like.
Oh man, I thought he was out on Kingsman 3.
Oh, that's a good question. So That might be a conversation for another time. But I know there's been a lot of like prequel, sequel, that type of stuff. I'm not exactly sure what the lay of the land looks like, but we'll see.
All righty. Well, best of luck, Taron Egerton. If the Elton John pick fails, then you're probably in some pretty hot water, man.
Yep.
Going on to number six, we've got Instant Family with $12.3 million in its second week at the box office. And you saw this one, right?
I did see this one. I saw this one last Sunday. And I know we talked a little bit about it. I don't remember seeing a trailer for this. So I pretty much went in blind. I read a brief synopsis on IMDb. And like I knew it was kind of about, you know, husband and wife take on, you know, adopted kids. So I got that gist of it. But I really didn't know what to expect. And I'll be honest, John, I was very surprised with this movie. You know, it might be one of my biggest surprises of the year. I'm not going to say super great or high level quality or anything like that. But, you know, for a comedy, I laughed pretty heavily, you know, throughout, some pretty significant laughs too. And it wasn't the laughs that felt, you know, very lowest common denominator laughs. You know, there was some thought put into them, and I like that they weren't predictable laughs. You know, I didn't see a lot of the laughs coming from particular points, but they did, and I laughed. with Rose Byrne in particular, maybe I should have gave this movie more credit because she's been, you know, pretty good and a pretty significant part of a lot of the successes of movies whenever she's appeared in them over the last couple of years. You know, I know she started in Bridesmaids with Melissa McCarthy, but I kind of go back to Neighbors. That movie, that first one was all right. It's pretty good. She kind of stole the movie a lot from Zac Efron and what's his name, Seth Rogen, where both of those guys are heavy on comedy and kind of have names in comedy. And you know, I know Rose did Bridesmaids, but I really didn't have a huge a knowledge bank of what she could do, but she kind of stole a lot of those scenes from those people. So yeah, maybe I should have went in with more expectations because she's been pretty good in her stuff and she's funny here. Great chemistry with Mark Wahlberg. Much more endearing than his turn in Mile 22. Got some really good laughs in there. And Isabella Moner, I think I'm saying that right. She was the little girl in Sicario, Day of the Soldado. I think she's got a really bright future ahead of her. You know, she's got a pretty significant character she plays in this, and there's a lot of depth and a lot of nuance to her role. And she played well off of Wahlberg and Byrne. But yeah, it's ultimately a surprise. You know, it's pretty touching. I felt like it was earned at the end. There are the occasional times where it bleeds too much into like. Doesn't know what it wants to be, like a drama or a comedy. Sometimes a few moments like that will undercut the drama, or the drama will undercut the comedy, vice versa. But no, overall, I gotta say, I was surprised, man.
Well, it's good to hear, man. I'm glad that Mark Wahlberg, you know, kind of ended the year on a high note, because I really did not like Mile 22 at all. And I'm a big Wahlberg fan. I think he's got, you know, kind of a knack for the lighthearted comedy at times. And yeah, to your point, man, Rose Byrne, she's awesome. I thought she was really funny in, you know, Neighbors and Neighbors 2, regardless of, you know, how bad the movie might have been. You know, strong in Bridesmaids. I even thought she was really funny in Spy.
She was.
Wasn't a great movie by any stretch.
Yeah, good point there. You know, when I think of Spy, I know it's a McCarthy-led vehicle, but I think of her and I think of Jason Statham. She was pretty funny in that movie, so... Yeah, I probably should be giving it a little bit more credit because, you know, I can't think of really bad things she's done over the last couple of years outside of Neighbors 2. I wasn't a fan of that one, but everything else she's been pretty – her movies have been pretty solid that she appears in.
Yeah, well, good to hear, man. This is one that I wasn't even on the fence about it. I just wasn't going to watch it, but I'm down to rent this one when it comes out now.
There you go.
Alrighty, and we'll break into the top five now. Got Bohemian Rhapsody still going strong, bringing in $14 million for $152 million total gross in its fourth week in the box office. Did you get a chance to check this one out?
I have not, man. I feel terrible because it's been doing pretty good stuff, and you know, box office wise, and I do love me some Rami Malek, but no, it's one of those things where other things have gotten on my desk and on my forefront, and I've just kind of put it off almost to the point now where, you know, no one really cares what I think about it anymore. So I might just wait. I might just wait for it to come out on Blu-ray or something like that. Or maybe if it gets the surprising Netflix release, then I will get Netflix and I'll watch this. But no, I'm sorry. No thoughts on my end about it. I will roll at your thoughts and take those as the holy grail.
Well, shoot, man. It's been getting, you know, it's open big. I'd say open pretty big. And, you know, it's pretty highly rated on IMDb. And I know I wasn't a huge fan. I think I gave it like 2.5 stars. So might have to give this one another watch before I, you know, before we really delve into the award season breakdown in January.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they've only got one award they can really win, or not win, but, you know, maybe get someone in for, and that would have to be Best Actor, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing that's what it's going to be, you know, that'll be like the strongest one that it's up for.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, film editing, costume design, maybe like sound editing, something of that sort.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm thinking Malik for the lead. He should definitely be in the mix.
Okay.
All the way down from the number one spot to number four, got Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, bringing in 29.3 for a total gross of $116 million. And that's on a $200 million budget, so I can't imagine that, Warner Brothers is feeling too great about this one. You know, you and I talked about it. I don't think either of us is a, you know, giant fan of the Harry Potter franchise, let alone the fact that this is a spinoff of the franchise on top of that. So there wasn't a huge amount of interest. I'm not sure if this was, you know, part two of a three-part series or if this one caps it off, but I got to imagine they're not too thrilled with the numbers they're putting up right now.
Yeah, the numbers aren't encouraging, but I would say what's even more discouraging if you're a Warner Brothers, you know, executive is the fact that, you know, this is really dividing a lot of fans. I mean, you know, it's one thing to go off of reviews and kind of what we do. You know, we're not the gospel by any means. You know, we like talking about this stuff because we like doing it. And some people like to hear us talk about it or you know, read our writing. But, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes the reviews don't matter a whole bunch in a lot of movies. And I thought maybe with this case that would be the ultimate result of this. But everything I hear is like the fans of these movies, like the diehard fans, they're pretty disappointed too with how things have played out. I think they do a lot with, I haven't seen the movie, but I think they do a lot with, you know, changing motivations of characters. You know, they set up one thing in one movie, but in another way, they're presented in an entirely different fashion in this movie. And it feels like they're really frustrating a lot of people who, you know, make up the core fan base. And, above all, the things I've heard about this movie is just it's very incoherent. You know, it takes a long time to get going. And, you know, there are four or five different threads going over here tied with three threads over there. That's the thing I've heard a whole bunch. And you mentioned if you don't know if this is the capper or if you don't know if it's like the second part of a three-part movie. How I understand it is this is just the second part of like a five-part arc that they want to do with the Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, that's probably the most disheartening because, you know, they're not really comparable, but I kind of think towards the movies they try to really do big things with a couple years ago. It was like the Divergent movies where the first one did some really good numbers and, you know, I guess it was fine. It was all right. But then the second one came and, you know, it really just tanked all the momentum. And then, you know, they're to the point where they wanted to try to release that final one and they couldn't do it because there was no interest in them doing so. And I think they're still limbo on whether we want to release this on TV or what. So I'm not saying this is exactly that, but it's not a good look if this is the second movie and, you know, people are already kind of going up in arms, your core fan base, about, you know, what the direction of this franchise is going to look like.
Yeah, if they do plan on doing, you know, three more of these movies, if they don't do a direct tie-in to, or I guess more of a direct tie-in to Harry Potter, you know, outside of Dumbledore, or just really bolster the story that drives some interest, I think they're going to be, you know, struggling with a real uphill battle.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, we will go ahead and wrap things up here on Cinema Recap. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch up with you next week.